You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening and for subscribing. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we're recapping the Heat's 108-74 win over the Pistons. The Heat used a 21-0 run in the third quarter, holding the Pistons scoreless for the first 6.5 minutes to open up a 30-point lead and blow out Detroit. The defense was really impressive, holding Blake Griffin to just 13 points, Andre Drummond to only 5. The Pistons only made 34% of their shots. Really impressive defensive effort from the Heat. Maybe the best of the season, David.
I'm trying to think back to any other game that comes close. And I mean, obviously the lopsided margin of victory kind of skews in Miami's favor. But you're right. It was an incredible defensive performance. Detroit, maybe somewhat of a mirage. I mean, they've been playing really well, as we discussed in yesterday's episode with Duncan. He had talked about the recent growth of players like Drummond and Reggie Jackson playing at a high level. Jackson did not have a good game either. Blake Griffin.
I'm shocked.
He's been really, really struggling, I think, with the second half of the season. And there might be some injury concerns there, but they certainly seem to manifest there. I mean, I think really Detroit should probably shut him down for a little while. I know they're still in the thick of the playoff race, so maybe they can't afford to it. But at the same time, who cares? I mean, Detroit had a bad game, but I think it's mostly because Miami played at a really high level. Not only did they, shut Detroit down, but they scored at a high margin. They were efficient. They were energetic. They were passing. They seemed happy. I mean, to think about how many ups and downs this team has gone through over the course of the season, this is certainly one of the ups. I hope they can sustain it. I know we'll answer questions about this later on in the show, but for now, it was a joyous game. The crowd really got into it, even cheering for Udonis Haslam late in the game in the fourth quarter when it was assured that it was going to be a blowout win in Miami's favor. So those kinds of moments haven't been very frequent over the course of the season, and this was certainly a high point.
Yeah, I mean, everything has been difficult, right? Everything the Heat have gotten, they've really had to work hard for. This was not saying that they didn't work hard, but they ended up blowing the Pistons out, their biggest win of the season, by 30-plus points. So they didn't have to work as hard. You know what I mean? Like, this wasn't a game that came down to the stretch. And so I think there was a little bit of relief there. Like, finally, like, we've been putting the work in, and just something just sort of came easy for us. We were making our threes. Detroit wasn't making their threes. They went 8-37 from 3-point range. I mean, that's really bad. But
it's Miami,
and I want to talk about that. Yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit later on too. But you mentioned that they're happy, and I think part of that is because the rotation is really set here. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of like leading the charge on the Spo has done nothing wrong thing this whole season, as far as like people are questioning his rotations and everything like that. The one thing I will fault him for is not going to this earlier. But then again, it's hard to justify that in a locker room. It's easy for us, like from the outside in, saying, look, Bam should start, right? Like, Bam should be starting, start the kids, get all these guys on the bench. James Johnson shouldn't be playing. You know, this all makes sense. But it's really hard to sell that in that locker room. You really have to ease into it. And I think that was a challenge for Spo. And Whiteside being injured for those three games with that hit pointer, I think, opened the door to starting Bam, which really unlocked that Olynyk and Bam front court. Olynyk all of a sudden looks refreshed because he's not standing in the corner playing the Luke Babbitt role like he had to do next to Whiteside. Everything just everybody's sort of playing in their lanes. Mm-hmm. Like they're doing what they like to do on the floor, and I think that just makes a lot of sense. That second unit is having a lot of fun. Dwayne Wade has recently talked about just he likes playing with us on Whiteside. He likes just having him to throw lobs to because we know that Wade is so good at that. So everybody's like just playing in the right positions, playing in the right role. And I think and it's settled down the rotation. It's settled down the minutes. I think Spo is able to focus more on actually coaching the game as opposed to like, all right, who do I put in now kind of thing. And I think that's just really helped alleviate a lot of those concerns. And, you know, you and I know this from being around locker rooms, like those NBA players, for the most part, like structure. They like to have that. They like to know when their minutes are. They like to not have to look at the coach to figure out when they're checking in. They like to know, like, okay, I check in at the 6-minute mark of the first quarter. Let me get up and get rid of these warm-ups off. They like that. And now that the Heat have that, that's why they're playing pretty well over the last few games.
I'll say, look, you mentioned it, but James Johnson's injury kind of helped also establish Olynyk as the clear starter. But you can't overstate the importance of the trade from, you know, moving Tyler Johnson and Wayne Ellington kind of cleared that glut in the backcourt. Now you don't have to worry about getting those guys minutes. And yeah, you take a hit as far as having two of your best three-point shooters moved, but at the same time, you don't have to find minutes for them, and everybody else has to find a way to step up. And that talent was always there. I mean, it's not top-shelf talent, perhaps, but it's still talent enough to find a way to exploit whatever minutes you get and to make the most of those. And I think we've finally seen those, especially from our younger players. That young core is really playing at such a high level. And even though, again, you're missing something as far as three-point shooting is concerned, you still find some structure there and some opportunities to really build on this. And I think it's been great. You know, Miami seems to be playing much more carefree with that structure, if that makes any sense.
34 points off between Wade, Dragic, and Whiteside off the bench, too. So now all of a sudden you've really juiced up that bench unit. Miami, again, Wade, Dragic, and Hassan Whiteside, Derek Jones Jr., and Ronnie Magruder. That's the team coming off your bench. I'm pretty sure there was a time where we probably predicted that would have been the starting lineup, right? Like, now all of a sudden you've got like this bench on steroids. That's a real advantage for Miami. I think going into the playoffs, if they're able to hold on here, Magruder might fall out of the lineup if you shorten that rotation by one player. You know, you go from 10 to 9, which I think is what would happen there. So now you're talking about Derek Jones Jr., Whiteside, Dragic, Wade off the bench. That's a pretty good bench unit. I mentioned the playoffs. With the win, the Orlando and Orlando losing to the Wizards, the Heat now have a two-game lead over the Magic for the number 8 seed. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to your Twitter questions after this break. Let's go to Twitter to answer some of the questions you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This first one comes from Jordan, who writes in, given the remaining schedule and how well we've been playing as of late, what's an optimistic but somewhat realistic outcome for us when it comes to seeding? What do you think?
Well, I'm trying to figure out exactly where we are as far as the schedule is concerned. How many games do we have left now?
It's like 17 or 16 or something like that.
Okay. It's not exactly an easy thing to predict because Miami has been so up and down this season. They've got a fair share of home games and away games against some top-level competition there.
Yeah, they still have the seventh most difficult strength of schedule, according to Tankathon.
Yeah.
And that two games against the Bucks coming up. They have another game against Toronto, which has had Miami's number.
At San Antonio, that's playing at a high level.
I think they play the Celtics a couple more times.
A home and home, yeah, against Boston. I mean, Minnesota, yeah, Philadelphia. Look, there's plenty of teams, still some teams that are competing for playoff seeding. You know, it's not exactly ideal for Miami. Let's see. What's exactly how many games we have left there? Our record is now 32 and 35. So we're at 67 mm-hmm. games. There's 15 games left in the season. I don't know. I know we could break down each matchup. That's probably something we'll do in the future. But for now, with 15 games left, I'd say you could comfortably look at 9-6. And that's not exactly encouraging, but that's probably enough to hold on to the A seed in the playoffs.
I think you're right. I think an optimistic and realistic view is the number 8 seed. I think that's definitely optimistic, considering the fact that the Heat do have the seventh hardest remaining strength of schedule, and that, you know, 2-3 weeks ago we were wondering if the Heat should, or we're even going to make the playoffs. I've said that I don't think the Heat are going to make the playoffs, and they've proven me wrong potentially here. We'll see. They've only got a two-game lead for the eighth spot, and that could go away within 15 games. But Orlando isn't playing well. They're 4-6 in the last 10. They also have that two-game lead over Charlotte. They're 3-7. They look to be, both Orlando and Charlotte seem to just sort of be been collapsing. Yeah. And Miami at 32 and 35 are just kind of in by default. Not that they haven't played well. They're 6-4 in the last 10. They look a lot better with the new rotation we just talked about and stuff like that. But still, like, they're 32 and 35, and they're probably not even going to be 500 by the end of the year, right? And if they, like, if, you know, maybe at most they finish the year 41 and 41. But I'm not going to sit here and say that all of a sudden the Heat are a great NBA team. I just think that they're going to probably make it in as the 8th seed. I still think Detroit will get their stuff together. They crapped the bed in this game. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They've been playing really well lately. Brooklyn has been playing well, even though they lost to OKC tonight as well. But I think those two teams have enough of a cushion that they'll still finish ahead of Miami, and Miami will get in just at number 8.
Now, Miami has shown over the course of the season that they can beat really good teams, and they could also fall against bad teams. So
yeah,
that makes any kind of prediction impossible. But you'll hope that there will be someone engaged, that even as they travel. Look, the second part of that 15-game stretch, with the exception of that home-and-home against Boston, you've got games against Orlando, Dallas, New York. You know, those are teams that are, or even Washington, if you look at them as not necessarily competing for a playoff spot. I mean, those are games that are eminently winnable. But at the same time, can Miami remain focused? And you think that with this structure, with the rotation in place, and maybe we are overstating how important it's been, but I think we're not. I think it's been a key factor, and I think it's helping this team stay focused. Now, you hope that nothing must manifest, that there won't be any injury issues, that somebody who's related to the bench maybe starts to grumble about their lack of minutes. I mean, maybe James Johnson, although I don't expect that from him. He's never been that kind of a player necessarily, so I expect it to kind of stay positive, and if that's the case, 9-6 seems fair.
A fire emoji asks, any chance the Heat can convince Goran to opt out this summer and sign for a longer, cheaper deal? I love his contributions off the bench. David, I've been thinking a lot about this. I've been sort of mulling this over, and you and I have kind of from the outset, I think, kind of really pumped this whole idea of Dragic opting out and then signing like a 3 or 4 year deal, somewhere around the range of like $10 to $12-13 million a year.
Yeah.
I'm starting to look more and more. I don't think it happens. I actually think that Dragic is the one who pushes it because it makes sense for him financially to do that,
right,
especially coming off of this whole Knescope deal.
But
it doesn't really make sense for Miami. The more you look into it, even after you factor in you remove Tyler Johnson's contract out of the equation and you take Ryan Anderson's $15 million out, because assuming the Heat waive him, they only have to owe him $5.6 million next year. Even if you do all that, the Heat are still operating over the salary cap. Even if you take Dragic's $19 million out and you give him $13 million a year and you replace that, you're not like creating $6 or $7 million of cap space. That's not how this works. You're still, now, even if the Heat were to do that, they'd still be over the cap. And it's not as if that would be, for example, step one of creating max cap space or something. Even if you do that and you're able to shed Whiteside, and only take a little bit of salary back, you're still a team that without a whole lot of cap space. So it's not like doing all these things all of a sudden gets you in the room with Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. And it actually makes more sense if you're the Heat to just sort of like let Dragic play out this last season as an expiring, even making $19 million, even if he's making $19 million and coming off the bench, because I agree, I think he's been good off the bench. But it just makes more sense to go into next year as an expiring. And if you're the Heat, he's another year older next summer, right? We know that Pat Riley is circling that summer of 2020. It doesn't make sense to add another $10 to $13 million contract on the books for that year. Let Dragic's contract expire and then revisit that, and you might even be able to sign him for a little bit less money than at that point when he's older.
Yes.
And you can sort of just wait to see how the rest of the free agents in that summer of 2020 kind of shake out, and then you sort of decide what to do with Dragic.
Yeah, I mean, I've long said that I think that that's a key possibility just because of his state of mind, and I think he kind of peaked with the Euro Cup win last summer. I think that's really the highlight of his professional basketball playing career. And I think every player in the NBA has to assess where they are as far as whether or not they're realistically going to win a title. And I think for Goran, that doesn't seem like a possibility. Like, this team doesn't seem built to win a finals run anytime soon, barring, again, him re-signing with the team and then somehow miraculously acquiring superstar free agents or via trades that pushes this team's envelope significantly higher. So having said that, I think he's happier in Miami. I think he's, one of the things he's told me is that he didn't want to move his family. He's, finally gotten comfortable there. And that's a big step. The quality of life is a key factor for players, and it should be. And if that's the case, you have to weigh whether or not your family's happiness is more important than going on a potential title run in Milwaukee or Golden State or Houston or anywhere else. So
I think what you're So if the Heat don't offer him the out, because I said, I think Dragic is the one who pushes for himself to opt out.
I think that's the key point. That's the key point, though. I'm glad you brought it up. And that's something you haven't said before, so I'm glad you mentioned that. It seems like he would be the one to say, look, I want to stay with this team for 5 years. I want to finish my career here, even if that means taking significantly less money than he'll be making next year on his current deal. But
in favor of the financial security. So if the Heat don't give him that, does he look like, look, he's going to be can he afford to wait another year? Like if the Heat basically say, well, all right, we want you back here, Goran, but we want to, you know, for cap reasons, we want to wait until 2020 to revisit your deal. But if you're Goran, do you think, all right, well, you want me to come off the bench for a year and I'm going to be a year older then? Like, if he could still just opt out and sign elsewhere in favor of that financial security, because I guarantee you, and he knows this, he would make more money now as a free agent long term than he would next summer long term.
What if
you're Goran, you look at this free agency landscape. Outside of Kyrie Irving, there's not a whole lot of point guards available. Kyle Lowry, Mike Conley, they could be out there. John Wall, same thing, maybe as a trade chip. But all those guys are making $30 million plus. If you're like, there could be an opportunity here for Dragic as a free agent point guard.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if his agent will start kind of digging around and seeing whether or not there's a possibility. I imagine it's a July 1st deadline for him to opt out of his contract so he could become a free agent, something around there. And if that's the case, you know, then maybe he will take that opt out. I mean, I wonder if he kind of negotiates with the team and say, look, I'd be willing to take something significantly less, say 5 for $40. And again, that'll provide him more than enough financial security. It's probably less than he'll be quote unquote worth, but it'll still give him long-term stability and again, keep him throughout the rest of his career here. Would you be willing to accept that? Do you think Miami and Riley would be willing to do that?
I really don't see it. I really don't see it.
Because they want that financial flexibility in next offseason.
And there's just not a whole lot of wiggle room, you know? Like, even in like a crazy deal where he's making like $8 million a year, there's just not a whole lot of wiggle room. Because there's no guarantee you can get off of Dion. You can get off of Kelly. Like, there's no guarantee you can do that. So you really have to, I feel like, kind of pick your... You got to choose your battles, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And this is unfortunately one of them. That said, I do, you know, it's something we just need to be aware of, and that's why we bring it up. I do ultimately, I agree with you, Goran. It seems he's like really happy in Miami. I think he'd be more than willing to say, you know what, let me pocket the $19 million. I'll put more than enough of that into savings and we'll see what happens in 2020. Our stat of the game is next. It's time for our stat of the game. David, I'm going to go first this time.
All right.
My stat is 37, and that's the amount of threes that the Pistons took in the game. They only made 8, but the Heat still gave up 37 threes, and we've talked about this as an issue. They need to shore that part of the defense up. I think they challenged Detroit to make them tonight, going to a zone early and often there. But still, 37 threes is a lot, and I brought this up in our podcast with Duncan. I know they went to the zone a lot because Detroit's not a great perimeter shooting team. You really want to cut off what Drummond and Griffin do in the paint. It was the right game plan. I tweeted during the game, I think this was one of Spo's best coaching jobs of the season. That said, I don't think this works in the playoffs, and I really need to see in these next 15 games Miami fix this three-point situation.
I mean, you could have easily gone one more three-pointer out of Ellington, who went 3 of 7 from behind deep. And I think the biggest issue was Reggie Jackson going 0 for 6. I mean, Jackson kind of proved you correct in that he went, you know, again, 0 for 6 and 3 for 15 overall from the field. But if he had hit what he's been hitting over recent weeks, you know, maybe he had gone 3 of 6, this would have been a completely different game because that changes the momentum considerably. Maybe that 21-0 run doesn't start to build that way, and maybe Miami kind of falters down the stretch. Who knows? But you're right. I mean, it's a concern for Miami, and so I don't think anything's been fixed. Just Detroit happened to miss a lot of those wide-open shots, and a lot of those were wide open, and so that's still a problem for Miami. And I'm not sure that there's a fix there. I'm not sure that they can do anything. They're going to have to look. I mean, they've got 2 days off before they face – no, just 1 day off, rather, before they face Milwaukee. And that's going to – you know, that's not enough time to break down film and see why you give up as many threes as you have. But, I mean, it's something that they're going to have to look at and possibly correct.
So what's your stat of the game?
Well, you know, it's a one that's rife with nostalgia, Wes. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. I'm sure our listeners aren't. But today marks our 600th episode ever since we joined Locked On Heat.
Wow.
Yeah. it's been a long time. I was looking back at it and thinking about our 600 episodes. Look, we you know, our humble beginnings at allyoucanheat.com with the Heat Check podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, no structure there. It was basically like, oh, you want to record? And we would talk about almost anything. Episodes could routinely go over an hour long. There was that failed project where we were going to break down Air Bud. Remember that? That was a good
time.
That
was never published. I don't even know if we've ever talked about that on air. Yeah, we were going to break down Air Bud.
It was a long off season. Yeah, it was the post LeBron off season, and then we were like, you know what? Let's just talk about Air Bud because
we were talking
vanilla pudding, right?
A vanilla pudding. Yeah, we were talking about that. We're like, that would be a great podcast topic. And I think we got through like an hour of recording and realized like we only gotten through like 15 minutes of the movie. You know, it was
enough time for him to eat 80 cups of vanilla pudding and not, you know, die of dysentery. But whatever. I mean, it was like somehow Air Bud managed to hit the game winning shot, or I can't even remember how the
what
movie
a diet, out. Man. He would not survive in today's NBA with all the nutrition stuff and everything.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I mean,
this is Air Bud smoking cigarettes and eating vanilla pudding by the packs.
What's the name of that the European point guard with the Clippers?
Teodosic. Milos.
Who actually apparently is still a cigarette smoker in today's NBA. That's
fun,
very
fun Milos story, unrelated. But I was at the Clippers practice facility earlier in the season, and they're doing all the media stuff. And I think Doc is talking, or Tobias Harris on the team at that point was talking. And it was just before that they were set to do drills. So the Clippers, they do their media stuff before practice, right? So they get it out of the way, and then they go into practice.
Right.
So they were wrapping the media portion up, and all the players were huddled onto the far end of the gym to start running some sets. And they just started running some floppy sets and stuff like that. And I'm looking around, and I'm seeing all the players and a bunch of new faces with the Clippers and everything like that. And then I look over to my left. That was all the way to my right. I look over to my left. Milos is on the treadmill, staring out a window at everybody else practicing, just like sweating profusely on this like treadmill, only going like medium speed, right? But you could just tell like everybody's like, before you even practice, dude, like just get in shape, like get your respiratory system up and running, because like right now, like you just came from Europe smoking cigarettes and just like drinking wine for a living. Like this is the NBA, dude. You got to get in shape. I just like that's my lasting image of like if Milos never plays another NBA minute, and it's possible he might not. That's the lasting image I was left with Milos. But
see, I'd hoped he had been on the bike. Was it a treadmill or a bike? Either
it was
way,
a treadmill
on a treadmill, smoking a cigarette. That would have been perfect.
I like it. Almost just looked like he has one, like you know, like those old like gangster movies where they always have the cigarette just like hanging from their lip. Like he might as well just have that. That said, 600 episodes of Locked On Heat is quite an accomplishment, and look, I like that. We didn't even mention it. Udonis Haslam got into the game at the end of that, like the ultimate victory cigar, and that just made this episode that much more special. And so just really excited, and we really appreciate everybody who's listened to us. If you've listened to all 600 episodes, that's freaking awesome. Like, you guys are the best. And anybody else who's newer as a listener, we just appreciate all the support, and we hope that we make another 100 or so episodes and keep this thing going. So that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty perfect. I mean, we've had, look, the format has been a challenge for us sometimes coming up with daily podcasts, especially during the 11:30 stretch. I think that was the most difficult it's ever been for us, trying to find a way to want to talk about basketball and basketball in particular. But you know what? Then it was buoyed by that 30-11 stretch. And I think this season has kind of encapsulated perfectly, been a microcosm of that, and that there have been ups and downs, and it's always fun to talk basketball with you. And hopefully it's fun for our listeners to keep listening to our shows and the content that we provide.
You can connect with us on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, including Spotify. Rate, review, and say nice things about us. Check out the Patreon page for exclusive content that helps support the show. Thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you again tomorrow. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes. Yeah!